Are women less likely to be diagnosed with traumatic brain injuries? This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Concussions and other forms of brain injuries are often associated with male athletes in contact sports, but women suffer from them too. Joining me now to talk about the prevalence of these injuries and the symptoms related to them are University of Cincinnati Associate Professor of Neurology and Associate Director of Neurocritical Care Research in the Department of Neurology and Rehabilitation Medicine, Dr. Brandon Foreman. Welcome, Dr. Foreman.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And founder of the Ohio Domestic Violence Network's Center on Partner-Inflicted Brain Injury, Rachel Ramirez. Thanks for being here, Rachel.
Thank you so much for including domestic violence in this important conversation.
UC is a financial supporter of Cincinnati Public Radio, and we do want to note we'll be discussing details of intimate partner violence in this conversation that some listeners might find upsetting. Dr. Foreman, what is a traumatic brain injury, and is it different from a concussion?
Traumatic brain injury is really any primary injury to the brain where the brain gets either shaken up or hit directly, causing injury to the neurons, to the blood vessels, and that can occur in a variety of severities depending on the type of injury. Concussion is considered a mild traumatic brain injury, and mild being in quotes, because we know it does create a lot of problems long term, much of the same pathology that occurs during a car accident or a fall happens, but to a lesser degree in a mild traumatic brain injury. Concussion specifically is associated with very brief neurological symptoms, typically in terms of their presentation. But again, a lot of the longer term stuff can be very similar even to a more severe traumatic brain injury.
And Dr. Foreman, how common are traumatic brain injuries?
They're exceedingly common. It's sort of a pandemic worldwide, really. Millions of people in the U.S. are diagnosed each year.
Rachel, there's been a lot of talk about boys and men who play football and other contact sports and their risk of traumatic brain injuries. But you see these injuries in women who are victims of intimate partner violence, too. NPR discussed this in depth recently. Here's an interview with Maria E. Garay-Serratos, who discusses the abuse her mother endured.
My mom was hit a lot. There was choking. There was a lot of shaking. Objects thrown at her, shoved against the wall, thrown against appliances, dragged by her hair in the yard. My father was a very avid fan of boxing. And I remember seeing some of the symptoms that these boxers exhibited while they were in the ring. And I thought, oh my God, that's my mom.
Rachel, how often are women diagnosed with traumatic brain injuries as a result of intimate partner violence?
I think that this is a complicated question. I mean, the simple question is very, very rarely. I have hardly ever come across any domestic violence victims in my over 20-year career in domestic violence advocacy that have had a diagnosed concussion or a diagnosed traumatic brain injury. But what is so interesting is that everybody or most everyone who works in the domestic violence field, and even people who don't work in the domestic violence field, recognize how common assaults directed at the head, neck, and face are, including tactics such as strangulation, often referred to as choking by survivors. With our research here in Ohio done with you in collaboration with the Ohio State University showing that 86% of survivors accessing domestic violence programs have been hit or hurt in the head. About 83% of them have been choked or strangled. And 49% of the survivors that we interviewed said that they were hit or hurt in the head too many times to count. They couldn't even remember how many times that had happened. Because of unique challenges related to accessing medical care, one of the big differences between sports and domestic violence is talking about the attention it has come with sports. When people are playing sports, there's almost always other people around. There are people watching. You have teammates. There are spectators. Domestic violence happens in private. It happens with nobody around. There aren't even people to identify. It doesn't happen in front of anybody. So there are a lot of very, very unique circumstances and situations, but most domestic violence survivors, even domestic violence survivors who have extensive experience with head trauma with being choked or strangled or having something done to them that makes that deprives their brain of oxygen have never, ever considered that they could have potentially be impacted by brain injury.
Well, and Dr. Foreman, Rachel just mentioned this choking and strangulation and how it can deprive a person's brain of oxygen. That can result in a traumatic brain injury when your brain is deprived of oxygen for an extended period of time, can't it?
That's right. It impacts the trauma itself. But a lot of times, once the injury occurs, it's mechanical damage or injury. But often there's a cascade of what we call secondary brain injury. And one of the common patterns that we see is hypoxia or decreased oxygen for one reason or another. And it definitely impacts in a synergistic way the brain injury itself.
We're talking about traumatic brain injuries in women. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. Dr. Foreman, are there differences in men and women biologically that could make traumatic brain injuries more common in women?
That's a really good question. This is sort of an area of research where there's a lot of conflicting information. What we know from epidemiologic studies is that men comprise about two-thirds of the overall epidemiologic burden of TBI, even though we know that women probably underreported in a lot of these different studies. We know that there are some differences in outcome related to men versus women, wherein women often self-report more, and so that we know more about their symptoms after traumatic brain injury, and they tend to have worse post-concussive syndrome symptoms, such as headache, dizziness, and mental health disorders. But there's been a lot of speculation that there may be some underlying biological factors that contribute both neuroprotection, in some cases related to hormonal differences between men and women, as well as potentially factors contributing to worse outcome over time. Things like societal norms that dictate responsibilities that women have that they're much less capable of keeping up with after a traumatic brain injury that men might not report, even though the disability is the same, if not worse, for women.
Dr. Foreman, what are the symptoms displayed by someone with a traumatic brain injury? And can they be different for men and for women?
They can be potentially, and I think a lot of this is confounded by just the questions that we ask. So typically after a traumatic brain injury, a mild traumatic brain injury, where we can talk to that person and see what symptoms they're having, people complain of a variety of things, from confusion to transient amnesia to headache, but also things like depression and mood changes, fatigue and energy level changes, difficulty with things like looking at screens and bright lights even. And a lot of this stuff is self-reported, I think, more by women than men. And that's one thing that might contribute. But on the other hand, there may be differences in how women's brains actually respond to the trauma versus men's brains. And that's something that's an active area of research.
Rachel, what kinds of symptoms do the survivors that you work with typically exhibit?
One of the things that is also very complex and complicated in situations of domestic violence is that when survivors are hit or hurt in the head, neck, or face, or when they're choked or strangled, it is a very terrifying and traumatic experience. And we have spent many, many years in domestic violence talking about the impact of psychological trauma and traumatic stress. And we often see many survivors, if they have been assaulted and have been choked or strangled or have been hit or hurt in the head, a lot of times they can attribute some of those symptoms to the trauma of the event. And after something terrible happens to you, we assume that things are going to be difficult. I think that what we see a lot, you know, one of the things I always tell the domestic violence, we have a network of 76 member domestic violence programs across the state that serve almost 100,000 Ohioans a year. And we always say, you know, the brain has everything to do with what our body does. So signs and symptoms can be very, very different. But when we see the interaction of the psychological trauma caused by being hit or hurt in the head or choked or strangled, and then we see the neurological issues that can be created, a lot of times we do have people when talking about, I heard Dr. Foreman talking about sometimes, it's the anxiety or depression, and people think that that's in the mental health space. We know that there are survivors who are sometimes triggered by sensory issues, triggered by lights, triggered by noises. But then what does it mean when people are in shelters or accessing services or in service provision places, spaces, and the light hurts their eyes? So we look at how we talk about it. We know we have lots of survivors who have symptoms. We know one of the main categories of symptoms of concussions or traumatic brain injuries is problems with sleep, sleeping too much, not sleeping enough, problems waking. But we also know that trauma can heavily impact sleep. So it's one of the things that we've been working with our programs is to help them kind of understand this very important, complex, and integrated understanding of thinking about both the brain injury and the trauma that are co-occurring, but also how to provide some education and awareness to survivors that, yes, they have been through a trauma experience, a traumatic experience, and could be struggling with some of the ways which that impacted them, but their brain could also have been hurt. So we see problems sometimes with survivors. I remember one of my main memories from when I used to work into shelter was survivors who would routinely get lost coming back to services, coming back to the place that they had been living for a long period of time, and them really feeling a lot of shame and a lot of guilt and what was wrong with them and why couldn't they just get their act together. That is something that I did not identify when we think about those kind of pieces, the forgetfulness or the memory problems that survivors have when working with survivors who are making appointments and they made an appointment and then they call back to make an appointment again and don't remember doing that before. So we talk about some of the emotional symptoms, how some of the emotional symptoms can be heightened, some of the impulse, the ways in which that's related to impulse control, and also some of the physical symptoms with balance problems, with vision problems, with nausea or dizziness, and then the cognitive pieces, which are so critical to survivors who are often trying to access safety services, trying to access health services, accessing justice services. People have to be able to show up for appointments and fill out forms and collect paperwork and do all of those kind of things, which take, which when we have cognitive impairments that could be related to brain injuries and related to trauma and related to a host of other things that can make things more difficult.
We're going to continue our conversation after a short break, and later in the program, we'll discuss Goodwill's new program to recycle clothing and textiles. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about traumatic brain injuries in women and how they can be misdiagnosed. My guests are University of Cincinnati Associate Professor of Neurology and Associate Director of Neurocritical Care Research in the Department of Neurology and Rehabilitation Medicine, Dr. Brandon Foreman, and founder of the Ohio Domestic Violence Network's Center on Partner-Inflicted Brain Injury, Rachel Ramirez. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Rachel, before the break, we were talking about some of the symptoms that women experience, the people that you work with. Are these women aware they might have traumatic brain injuries? Have they ever considered the possibility or been diagnosed with a brain injury?
Almost universally, no, which is one of the reasons why awareness, why programs such as this are so critically important, as well as the training that we provide to our agencies across the state. As I said, because of so many different factors, including a lack of access to medical care, including safety concerns related after an assault, including that there often isn't anybody around to alert a person that they might have experienced a brain injury. Most domestic violence survivors, even if they tell us that they've been hit or hurt in the head more times than they can remember, if we ask them, have you ever had a concussion or a brain injury, they will say no. And they'll also say nobody has ever talked to us about that and nobody has ever mentioned it. One of the things that I think with a lot of our response related to how concussions or traumatic brain injuries can potentially get identified, even in other public spaces. I have three kids and have kids that play sports, which is where we have a lot of our information and knowledge about concussions from. And every time I sign my children up for a recreational sport or anything like that, I get a concussion fact sheet from the Ohio Department of Health. because when my kids are playing sports, I'm there watching, or someone's there watching. My husband coached rec sports and had to do a concussion course offered by the CDC in order to do that. There, because of the privacy of this issue and because of the lack of access and information, and even the lack of understanding when we think from the brain injury space about the significant role that violence can play, most domestic violence survivors have never considered this could be something that they could be experiencing. So, and of course, if you're not aware of a potential problem, you're not going to be reaching out to resources for concussions. You're not going to be calling the Brain Injury Association of Ohio or learning more information about concussions or brain injuries. So this is one of the reasons why I'm so grateful to have the opportunity to talk about this on your program, because we also know that the vast majority of domestic violence survivors never access our domestic violence programs. So having out there be an awareness in our country and in our community that one of the causes of traumatic brain injuries or concussions can be domestic violence is so critically important for the health and safety of survivors.
The NPR report that we talked about earlier in the program discussed how women can be overlooked for possible traumatic brain injuries. Let's hear more from the interview with Maria E. Garay-Serratos.
I already knew it was some kind of dementia or dementias. I couldn't get the neurologist to understand that she had a lot of trauma to the head.
Dr. Forman, can you tell us how and why women get overlooked for these concussions or traumatic brain injuries?
It's a great question. I don't think we fully know, but you know, there are a lot of assumptions that people make when first encountering someone who's got symptoms related to TBI. And whether it's because of the nature of the incident, as Rachel was mentioning, I think that's an important aspect. But even our assumptions about some of the symptoms, you know, things like sleep disorders or mental health problems, you know, the same problems in a man with the relevant history might get chalked up to TBI, whereas it might go dismissed in a woman as being primarily a mental health issue. And while those assumptions aren't right necessarily, I think that is part of the issue. In the nature of the trauma itself, I think does make it a little bit harder for, you know, some of these folks, especially people who've experienced domestic violence, to be able to comfortably or feel safe in seeking medical attention to get those relevant diagnoses. And, you know, the final thing is that there's not really a, you know, for mild TBI, an objective diagnostic sort of way to identify traumatic brain injury. You know, we get CT scans of people's heads, but in mild TBI, those are often negative. And you're left with a clinical diagnosis based on the symptoms folks have. Now, that might be changing. There's some FDA-approved biomarker tests that can be used to identify traumatic brain injury. And my hope is that those will become increasingly relevant to diagnose folks who might otherwise be assumed to have symptoms related to something else. And that includes mild TBI in folks who might not have considered it.
Rachel, what do you hear as some of the, what do you think are some of the reasons women with traumatic brain injuries might be misdiagnosed or that might be missed?
Well, I think, you know, it is one of those pieces that many survivors themselves assume, as well as professionals that work with survivors. We have talked about the connection between domestic violence and trauma and traumatic stress, as well as the connection between domestic violence and mental health. And a lot of those, potentially those symptoms that sometimes are potentially overlapping, get framed with and get assumed with both professionals and survivors as being in the behavioral health space. In domestic violence services and in many areas, the training and awareness of brain injury tends to be very low. We don't do a lot of training in the domestic violence space around brain injury. Among behavioral health professionals, there's often very limited awareness of that. So I think that it is, and we have had, when talking about how even survivors that have attempted to access domestic violence or access medical services related to brain injuries, I literally have emails from people across the country who say, I went to my primary care doctor and told them about my head trauma and got sent to a psychiatrist or got sent to a mental health space when the domestic violence, when I talked about the domestic violence piece. I also think Dr. Foreman is very correct. It's very, very different going to a doctor. We also know domestic violence can also interfere with people's connections to medical care. Many domestic violence survivors don't have doctors or it isn't safe for them to go see doctors, but it is also very different when we talk about some of the stigma, some of the shame, and some of the responses to domestic violence. It's different to tell somebody that you're struggling with things based on being hit or hurt in the head, neck, or face that your partner assaulted you versus saying, I slipped and fell on the ice, or I was in a hockey game and something happened. So, I think it is just there are so many different layers to things when we think about lack of access to medical care and lack of awareness that when we see when survivors have been hit or hurt in the head, that this can cause a concussion, as well as those assumptions. We know I just got an email from one of our programs recently who has a survivor who was seeing both a counselor and a psychiatrist who both, because they've been a part of our network and we've done lots of training and awareness around this, think that she needs to see somebody, but are having a very, very hard time. The survivor is a member of a marginalized community, has been to doctors before, and has not had her concerns taken seriously. So there are challenges on so many different levels about getting people connected to the proper care, getting people connected to a provider who not only understands the domestic violence piece, but understands the issue related to trauma and even some of the safety concerns and other considerations that go into that I take into mind when I'm seeking care or seeking help for something in the domestic violence realm.
Dr. Foreman, how much research has there been into women and traumatic brain injuries? I'm thinking, we've been focused today on domestic violence, but there are also women and girls in sports that can be contact sports, and you don't hear about that as much as you do about the male contact sports. How much research has been done on all this for women and girls?
The research is sort of burgeoning. It's an area of active kind of consideration, both with federal grants as well as folks who are doing, in humans as well as translational research that's done at the bench. And there are a lot of questions about whether there are biological differences that contribute to outcome or even to the incidence of trauma. But it's one of these areas where I think there's a growing recognition that there are disparities. And one of the biggest confounders to this has just been the existing literature relies on the epidemiology, where men are just far more commonly involved in traumatic brain injuries, at least, according to what's captured in these studies. And so it makes it a lot harder to narrow down and focus on a much smaller group and retain the same statistical power and ability to make some inferences based on that literature. So it really has been a big challenge, even in translating the things that are found in the lab to our human patients with TBI, it has been problematic simply because gender and sex have not been really considered as a specific variable until fairly recently. So I think there's a lot more to know about this, and certainly there are differences, but what those are and how they contribute and how ultimately we need to consider those in treating folks with TBI is, it's something that's still under active investigation.
And Dr. Foreman, what are some of the treatments that can help alleviate symptoms that are associated with traumatic brain injuries?
That is a big hole in our ability to provide care for these folks. There's not a lot of specific treatments. One of the most important things, obviously, is recognition. But even then, the resourcing to take care of folks from a traumatic brain injury-centric sort of standpoint is very limited. So at the University of Cincinnati, Gardner Neuroscience Institute, we do have a neurotrauma center and neurotrauma clinic. It's led by the fantastic Dr. Lauren Aguinia. But it's a unique thing. There's not a whole lot of this out there. And many of our primary care physicians, may be aware, obviously, of mild TBI and concussion, but the post-concussion syndrome is something that most folks aren't aware of or aren't aware of the sort of protean symptoms that folks get, a lot of what we've been talking about here. And so we tend to approach this from a symptomatic standpoint. If you have headaches, we try to treat the headaches. If you have some functional deficits or cognitive deficits, we try to connected with resources like cognitive behavioral therapy or cognitive rehabilitation. But even finding those resources that are specific for or have experience with traumatic brain injury can be a real, real challenge. And this is a problem in the TBI field, sort of worldwide, certainly in the US. There's just not a lot of TBI-specific treatment options, and therefore not a lot of TBI-specific resourcing to provide people. So we do what we can, and specialty centers, I think, really help to bridge that gap for folks who are in a position where they really do need that specialty care. And so, it matters in terms of who you see and how you get plugged in those situations.
What about brain rest? Is that something that helps some patients?
It definitely does. There's a period of time after concussion where, the brain has a little bit of difficulty with trying to match its metabolism with what it can do. So it's the brain's supply and demand, so to speak. And so if you put excess demand on the brain in those early days, or even a week or two after traumatic brain injury, sometimes it can even exacerbate things because the brain has trouble sort of balancing how it normally operates. So there is a period where brain rest actually can be helpful for the brain to recover from these injuries that may not be visible on a CAT scan, but are clearly causing symptoms. But even after a week or two of trying to reduce the screen time, which is incredibly important, reduce the cognitive load of some of the things that, for instance, our athletes are involved in, like school, it can still have some of these symptoms that persist. And that's really where specialty care can be helpful if resourcing can be found to treat symptomatically some of those things. In that way, they can get back to what they need to do, what they like to do in the long run, whether it's school, sports, or work. But treating those things tends to be symptomatic, incomplete, and honestly, a lot more work is needed in terms of trying to prevent these longer-term symptoms.
And, so many people experience traumatic brain injuries, whether they're concussions or even these milder injuries, athletes, older adults who fall down, get injured, children who get injured playing. Just very briefly, Dr. Forman, what could we be doing to reduce the risks, as briefly as you can tell me?
Reducing risk is a primary thing. So it's primary risk prevention, making sure you're wearing your helmets in appropriate ways for athletes, making sure you've got the safety measures you need at home if you're an older adult, particularly on blood thinners and antiplatelet agents that might increase your risk for more severe traumatic brain injuries, and driving safely, right? All of these things are really critical. And of course, awareness and being seen before secondary brain injuries or worsening symptoms can develop without recognition.
Okay, well, I've been talking with University of Cincinnati Associate Professor of Neurology and Associate Director of Neurocritical Care Research in the Department of Neurology and Rehabilitation Medicine, Dr. Brandon Forman, and founder of the Ohio Domestic Violence Network's Center on Partner-Inflicted Brain Injury, Rachel Ramirez. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you, Lucy. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks again.
Up next, we'll hear about Goodwill's new program to recycle clothing and textiles that its thrift stores don't sell. This is Cincinnati Edition.